to have Sihao Chang. I hope I'm, well, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing your name correctly, but maybe you could
correct.
But from Johns Hopkins, telling us about scattering transform and cosmology, or CNN without training. So yeah, whenever you're ready, please take it away.
Can you get rid of the thing on the side or no?
Yeah.
So I can start now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm very happy to have this opportunity to share with you something I did recently and also found very interesting. So I'm a postdoc at Johns Hopkins, and actually I'm now also visiting Paris with my advisor, visiting the Ecole Normale here. Yeah, so and I'm applying for next postdoc job this year. So the topic I'm going to talk about is about a new statistic which can very efficiently characterize the statistical properties of like random fields and textures in a field. And also I'm going to talk about the cosmological application we did with this statistic. This work is done with my advisor, Brice Ménard, and Yuan-Sen Ding, and Zhongwang Bruna. So here, first, I'm showing you an array of galaxies, about 300. So as astronomers, of course, we want to do classification of them. That's exactly what Edwin Hubble did 100 years ago. But now the problem is this is just a tiny fraction of the Sloan Digital Sky Survey database. And now we have millions to billions of galaxies, so we want to do it automatically. So wouldn't it be nice if we can have an automatic algorithm to arrange these data sets so that like the semantic meaning automatically emerge, and we can then do easy classification. So this kind of problem is not limited to astronomy. So here I'm showing you the surface temperature of the ocean on Earth. And if you zoom in to about 100 kilometer scale, we'll see, again, various kind of morphology of the turbulence field. And again, it would be nice if we can have a statistical representation of the field so that these all different morphologies can be arranged in an organized manner. So for example, like this region, you see some noise, dominant region. Here you see big eddies. Here you see the sharp currents and the current fronts. And here you see some cloud contaminations. So according to the great physicist Gibbs, doing theoretical science is about finding a viewpoint from where the complex world around us looks simple. So nowadays we have so many data, and so extracting information from data is really about finding the inner structures of these field kind of data sets, and then to come up with a mathematical vocabulary to form a representation of the complex data set so that we can find some simple things, that's the information. So it's really much about finding a mathematical representation. And once we have this representation, we can actually do a lot of applications. When we don't have data as scientists, we can do data exploration, like finding similar images or finding outliers. And when we have some model discrete, we can do classification. And as like cosmologists or some theoretical physicists traditionally, in the traditional meaning, when we have continuous model, we can do a parameter inference. So once we talk about the statistics or a statistical representation of a field, usually the first thing come to mind is the power spectrum. But as you know, it's actually a very limited vocabulary. So here I'm showing the left-hand side is a simulated cosmic density field. The right-hand side is a Gaussian random field with the same power spectrum. So a power spectrum cannot quantify their difference. And if we want to do so, we need a vocabulary beyond the power spectrum. So the next thing comes to mind might be the traditional higher order statistic, right? But although it works well in weakly non-Gaussian case, actually it will fail in the highly non-Gaussian regime. So the main two problems are that first it will start to lose information actually, and also there are too many configurations. So here I'm showing a kind of toy experiment showing how the high order statistic can actually lose information in highly non-Gaussian regime. And this is an experiment just for one pixel of the field. So it's a one variable experiment and assume the PDF of this variable is a log normal distribution, which is relevant to cosmology. And the x-axis here is the parameter describing the non-Gaussianity of the log normal, right? So when the variance over mean is small for log normal, it's almost a Gaussian. When that's large, it's highly non-Gaussian. And the y-axis here is showing the amount of fissure information extracted by some statistic as the fraction of the total fissure information contained in the distribution. So as expected, if you use second order statistic, in the Gaussian regime, you can have all the information. In the non-Gaussian regime, you start to lose information. So people tend to believe that if you use high order statistics and add all the infinite the order of moments, you can finally recover 100% of information in all the regime. But unfortunately, that's not correct. So mathematicians knew this for a long time, but unfortunately in the cosmology community, it's not until 2011 people realized that's not the case. So if you do an experiment, you see that the higher order statistic will start to fail at some non-Gaussianity, even if you have all the higher order moments. Right, so this means basically we still have the problem how to characterize a field and extract information from it when it's highly non-Gaussian. And recently we've witnessed the rising of a brand new approach to tackle this question. It is the convolutional neural net approach, and is very successful with impressive results in the computer vision industry. But it also comes with a problem, right? As we know, you need to train a lot of parameters, and people don't really understand, at least now, how these optimizations are done and what the meaning behind it. And in addition to that, we see actually, the convolutional neural net seems to be using a different type of mathematics inside. So for example, you have the hierarchical convolution. We don't see that in higher order statistics. And also there's point-wise nonlinearity, which we also don't see in higher order statistics. So then the question is, can we combine these two totally different approaches and find a new statistic which can share the advantage of both sides? So that's exactly what driving mathematicians 10 years ago to develop the scattering transform. So it had been actually 10 years old, so it's not new anymore. That's for mathematicians. So for physicists, it's still quite new. So for example, I'm the first person apply it in cosmology, and it's almost the same time for astrophysics in general. So that's why I think still it's something of a great interest now. So this kind of transform is basically some statistics borrowing ideas from convolutional neural net, but itself is just the traditional statistics. So you don't need to train something and you don't need to learn. And let me see. So at the beginning, I would like to first show some visualization to demonstrate the power of the statistic, and then go to perhaps some detail of the formalism. This is some image synthesis result. So the idea is that starting from my input field, and we calculate some summary statistics, and then we want to randomly generate new images which have the same summary statistic. And then we can compare the visual textual feeling like between these generated image and the input field. So this is a way to basically visualize what a statistic see from a field. So if you play this trick on the power spectrum statistics, what we find is basically Gaussian textures that's expected. And if you add bispectrum, we get something like this. It's slightly better, but still far from the input texture. So if you use the scattering statistic, this is the result. So I think this is, in terms of textures, it recovers a lot of the input field. So I think this is strongly suggesting that these scattering statistics can characterize the properties of a field, of the input field. By the way, this is the weak lensing convergence map. So we played the same trick to a range of different physical fields. As shown here, these are the input field, and constantly we get a very surprisingly nice result. So the lower panel here, one of the randomly generated new images. So then before talking about the formalism, to give you some more motivation to continue listening, I'm showing quickly explaining the cosmological results. Sorry, some questions?
Yeah, I have a question in the previous slide. So when you're talking about including power spectrum and CNN, so if I just do CNN, then I can recover the same image, right, for different realizations? So what additional information you're getting by combining with the P of K?
Sorry, I think here I'm not using CNN.
Okay.
Yeah, so these scattering transform, I will talk about that later, but that's some translation invariant statistics. So something similar to higher order statistics, but just the mathematics are different. So the stability property of these statistics are different from higher order statistics, right? But it's not CNN.
Okay. Thank you.
Right, and also like for power spectrum, we know kind of analytically, right, how to generate the randomness of these texture. We kind of randomize the phase in Fourier space, right? But even in bispectrum, we already don't have those kind of analytical form of how to randomly do that. So then there's another trick to basically randomly generate new images is using some gradient descent optimization to do the random randomization. Right, but that's technical details. Yeah, so here the result, quickly speaking, is we want to, these are realizations of two weak lensing again, projected mass density field from two cosmologies. And in cosmology, we want to basically use these maps to tell which cosmology we're living in, right? So it's basically using the texture here to constrain cosmological parameters. And there's a famous degeneracy in weak lensing cosmology. So if you use power spectrum, you cannot distinguish these two cosmology. But if you use the scattering coefficients, basically, you will shrink the error bar by an order of magnitude. So this is in a noiseless case. I'll talk about that later. Right, so now let me go into some details about the formalism of these statistics and explain to you so why it works so well. Basically, I want to show that the scattering transform can be obtained by just modifying or slightly modifying the power spectrum definition. So view it from another point of view and modify it. Or it can be obtained by slightly simplifying the structure of convolutional neural net. So it's basically something in between of these two approaches. Right. So I think the first very interesting thing to realize is that instead of viewing the power spectrum as a two-point function in Fourier space, it can also be viewed as a convolution plus a nonlinearity in real space. So the idea here is that you have a field and you can convolve it with a Fourier kernel, with a Fourier mode, so that's projecting the field right to a basis. And then you get a complex field, right? Because the Fourier kernel is a complex valued field, you have the real part and the imaginary part. And you can also view it like the complex number by as a modulus plus the phase, right? And the power spectrum is basically taking this modulus field and take a pointwise square of it and then do a spatial average of it. So it's basically equivalent to the Fourier space definition. It's just a definition in real space. But then you see that this is something kind of similar to a one-layer convolutional network, right? You have a convolution with a kernel and then a pointwise nonlinearity. But unfortunately, the power spectrum cannot be like easily extended to probe interactions between different scales, right? If you just follow this idea, the reason is the Fourier modes are basically orthogonal. So then we can do two kind of modifications to make it actually look better. One is we see that basically after convolving with the Fourier modes, you have no spatial information in this field. That's why you cannot go further. So instead of convolving with a Fourier mode, we can convolve it with a local kernel, and then you have some spatial information remaining. And another thing is the basically, like in these viewpoints, you don't need to raise the power of it, right? You can just take the modulus instead of a modulus square. So that is actually the definition of the scattering transform. So these fields, if you take a spatial average to create the translation invariant statistic, that's the first order scattering coefficients. And we can play the same trick, do the same analysis on this modulus field to get the second order scattering transform. It's basically something like this, so that we can first probe interactions between different Fourier modes. And second, we don't raise the power of this field. So that will give us a lot of desirable stability problem. And also that will help to extract more information, actually. And by the way, I mentioned like the local kernels, basically there's something called wavelet, right? It's systematic way to organize a family of localized kernels. And there's something basically in between of a delta function and the Fourier kernel. And it's just like a linear transform of the original field, right? But somehow these representation have the advantage of they have some advantages. For example, people find in mammals vision system in our brain, some particular cells are responding the wavelet like patterns in the field view. Yes.
Oh, I see. I just had one quick question. If I understand the definition correctly, then the scattering transform is invariant under flipping the sign of the input field.
Yes, you're right.
So then I was wondering, for fields which are very asymmetric, like the cosmological density field, halos, positive peaks behave very differently from voids or negative peaks, then does that mean that you might be losing some of the information?
That's a very good question. I'll show you some results later. Basically, I think in some regime, you don't lose information. That's not strictly mathematically proved, but there are good evidence showing that. but you're right. So it's basically the scattering is something like the second order and four point functions. But because it used low order nonlinearity actually helped to gain a lot of information that is traditionally understood as in higher order moments. Right. But you're right. It's symmetric. There are some extensions of this idea which can deal with the asymmetry. So I'll also mention that later if time allows.
Follow up on that. So I think the question, is it like an adaptive procedure for different problems to come up different wavelets that are actually form complete bases for that problem, or is it?
That's also a very good question. So so you're asking whether different type of wavelet profiles will matter, right, for different fields or questions. I think, so for some very strange questions, yes, but for general questions, I think the answer is no, because wavelets actually always look like a bandpass filter in Fourier space and a localized waveform in real space. So for a large range of questions, I think it doesn't really matter exactly the profile of the wavelet. Right, so I also show some results. So we did a test on cosmological constraint, and in some cases you see the difference, but with general wavelets, you don't see difference. Right, so I'll quickly go through these. It is basically, you have wavelet cells in the brain, and also people found that if you want to decompose natural images with a basis where you find sparsity of the representation, then you don't have Fourier modes, you have instead wavelet modes. And also people found in the trained convolutional neural nets, the first layers are always wavelet-like patterns. So this means this localized kind of waveform really is matching the structure of the properties of a large range of physical fields and natural images.
I have a quick question.
Is there
a way to understand a relationship between these wavelets and like peak counts? Because I know I've heard some discussions about applying CNNs to like weak lensing maps, and it seems a lot of that information might be related to like counting peaks.
Right. So I don't think they are directly related. They are basically using different nonlinearity to the field, nonlinear transform of the field, right? So they may extract the same information, but from different viewpoints. So the scattering coefficient, because it's a kind of a moment, right? So still something similar to the traditional like two-point function or three-point function, but the peak count is doing a kind of non-local non-linearity of the field, right? And then doing some histogram-like statistics. So I think they are not very similar, but of course they can extract the same information if in some cases. Right, so thanks for the question. And here is, I'm just showing that if you consider all the scales at in the family of wavelets, then you form some structures similar to the convolutional neural nets. But the difference is you don't need to learn the kernel, and you just need to use a family of predetermined kernels. Right, so here I want to emphasize one thing, which is we found there are very interesting interpretations of these scattering coefficients. So for example, the first order is a mean, that's trivial. The second order is something similar to a power spectrum, but because it's first order nonlinearity, so there are slightly different. And the second order is something similar to a power spectrum analysis of a locally measured power spectrum map. So like in higher order statistics, that's something some subset of four-point function, right? You might think this is trivial, but again, because of this first-order nonlinearity, it actually contains much more information than the four-point functions. So, and here I'm going to show some visualizations of these coefficients. So for example, if you take the ratio between these second order and the first order, that's basically the sparsity measurement of the field. And it's not only the pixel sparsity, but kind of structure sparsity, because you do that after a convolution of wavelet. So as you can see, when it's larger, then your structure is basically located in a few positions instead of widely spread in the field. So that's basically a measure of nonlinearity.
So do you have a measure of skewness then? Because this is like a four-point function. What about three-point function?
Yeah, you're right. So I don't think these statistics have a skewness measurement.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you know that your field is always positive, right? So the measure of tail is basically similar to the skewness measurement.
I see. Thanks.
Right, and more interestingly, we found that if you find consider the orientation dependence of these coefficients, take the ratio. Between when the wavelets are parallel to the wavelets when they are perpendicular, you find that they correspond to the shape of textures, and like from curvy to straight line textures. I think this is almost, at least for me, this is the first time that we can do a correspondence between some mathematical representation, some numbers, to like this textural difference of the field. And this, by the way, is also, I think, a good way to try to understand what a convolution neural net is doing in inside. And so here I'm going back to the data set of the ocean surface temperature data set, and it's actually arranged by just compressing the whole data set, whole image, to the two coefficients mentioned before, one sparsity and one averaged shape curviness of the texture. And as you can see, that is quite well organized. And if you look at this region, we can pick one image and ask look for other images with the same, with similar representation or similar scattering coefficients. And you can find something with similar textures, and so it worked well too. So by the way, this is interesting because someone also used convolutional neural nets plus a normalizing flow to try to find outliers in this data set. So as you can see, actually these eddies are really outliers. They're rare in this data set and they're special. But somehow the convolutional neural net can easily find those with high, like sharp edges and high power spectrum in the data set, but they fail to find these regions with very special structures in the field. So I think this is the, showing that like blindly using convolutional neural net might not always be the best strategy.
So I have a question here.
Yes.
Yeah, if I understand correctly, when you are choosing the wavelets, you are choosing some scale, right? Over with the oscillations are integrating out. So how you are choosing that for length scale?
You mean the scales or the profile?
The scales.
Okay. Yeah. So the wavelet basically will cover all the possible scales, and so. Yeah, so finally you get actually a family of so here it's use all the scales and then you get many coefficients, right? So they're a function of scales. And here I'm just simply averaging over different scales, right? So originally you have all the coefficients as a function of several scales, But yeah, so this is a deeper compression of the field.
Okay, so you basically choose different scales and then you calculate the coefficients and add over it, average over it.
Sorry, I could not hear you clearly.
So what I was asking is you calculate the signal for all different scales and then you average over to get this distribution.
Yes. Yeah. So for this particular application, I average over different scales. And for the cosmological applications, of course, you can play it the same as the power spectrum, right? You have the measurement at different scales and then look for the cosmological dependence of these coefficients. Mm-hmm. Right. So here I'm just showing a very simple compression of the data set. It can be done better.
Okay, thanks.
Right, so finally I come back to cosmology and show you some cosmological results. It's about weak lensing cosmology. So weak lensing, as you might already know, the idea is to use the distortion of background galaxy shapes to measure the distribution of foreground matter. So it's something similar to like when you look through the swimming pool, the grid in the bottom is distorted. So you can use that distortion to infer the surface of the water. And people have invested a lot of money and facility times on weak lensing cosmology, basically because it's using gravitational effects and it's kind of a clean way to really mapping all the matters in the universe instead of just the bright matters. And now we have these major surveys. And in the near future, there will be a Euclid space mission, there will be the Rubin LST survey, and also the Roman telescope. They it's basically $1 billion surveys. So with this data, we don't want to lose any information collected from them. That's why we look at the statistics. So the working flow is like from the raw image, you compile some galaxy shape catalog with positions and shapes and use the shapes to compile a mass map or a shear map, which is a map of the matter distribution, a 2D matter distribution. And then using the statistical property of this matter distribution to infer cosmological parameters. So I'm only focusing on the last step now. And again, the task here is we have two cosmology from with different parameters, and we want to infer the underlying physical parameters with just the statistical property or the textures of these two fields. So these are simulations from the Columbia Lensing Group. And as you can see, they're textually different, but again, power spectrum, unfortunately, cannot distinguish them, and which is converted in this parameter space like this. So here is the omega matter sigma A, it's two parameters. And if you use power spectrum alone, here's a constraint, there's a degeneracy along this direction, basically corresponding to the extent of non-Gaussianity or how deep you already go into the nonlinear regime. And these directions correspond to basically the variance of the field. So that can be easily constrained by power spectrum. And if you ask, if you use the scattering coefficients, basically you can shrink the error by a factor of 10 in this noiseless case. If you decompose it into the contribution from the first order and the second order scattering, it also makes sense, right? Because the first order is similar to power spectrum, but the second order is really measuring the extent of non-Gaussianity. So you might wonder, what about using a three-point function traditionally? Here's the result. And of course, if you add the bispectrum, you can have a better constraint than the power spectrum alone. But as you can see, it's contains less information. And also usually you need actually more number of bispectral coefficients to get this precision. And if we consider a more realistic case with, yes.
Oh, hi, I just had a quick question about those forecasts.
Yes.
So could you say a little bit more about what was assumed on how the scattering coefficients were distributed? Because they might be non-Gaussian, right?
Sorry, you mean the sampling distribution of the statistics, right?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. Of course, they're never Gaussian, right? There's no guarantee that they're Gaussian. Even the power spectrum, binned power spectrum, are not Gaussian.
Yes.
So that's a very good point. And always, like in this case, we are relying on the central limit theorem, right, to Gaussianize the distribution of these statistics, because otherwise it's hard to come up with a form of the likelihood. So actually we rely on the Gaussianity of the distribution. So that's why this question is very important. We want some statistic with Gaussian distribution. And I think one of the advantages of the scattering transform is that its distribution is more Gaussian. So there are two reasons. One is that it's basically binning different modes by wavelet, right? So it's already doing the binning itself. And the second reason is it keeps first order. So one of the main reason why like three-point function or even higher order statistics, they have non-Gaussian distribution is because it's higher order. So it's basically amplifying the tail of the original non-Gaussian field. So that's why they're harder to Gaussianize just by adding larger field of view. And because of the scattering coefficient, they're keeping in first order. So the Gaussianize much quicker than the bispectrum, for example.
Hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Do you compute the correlations between the scattering coefficients? Like,
we have to, because in order to do this inference, we kind of assume it's a Gaussian likelihood, and then we need to measure the mean of and the covariance of the statistic.
Okay.
Yeah, so these I skipped a lot of detail here. This is an inference based on simulations. So we need to sample simulations, sampling different places in the cosmological parameter space, and then calculate the statistics at all their places and assume that the distribution of the statistic as a function of cosmology is some lower order, like it's a Gaussian form, and the mean and the covariance matrix is a lower order polynomial of as a function of cosmology, or yeah, some with some other ways to do the emulator of the likelihood, yeah, and then get the inference.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Sorry for these distraction.
Okay. I want to follow up. Can you go back?
Yes.
So here you have S0 plus S1 plus S2. I don't quite understand. Which one is S0, which one is S1, and which one is S2?
Oh, yeah. So S0 is just the mean of the field.
Okay, just the mean of the field. Okay.
S1 is basically a first order power spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And S2 is basically a first order four-point function, a subset of four-point function.
So how does the S0 only constraint look like? You're not showing that?
S0 only doesn't have cosmological information, right? Because emergence field and the mean should be zero.
So it's really S1 and S2. Okay, so then the other thing is, you were saying that S2 is like a trispectrum, is a four-point function. So shouldn't you compare this with the trispectrum plus power spectrum on the right, as opposed to the biospectrum?
Yes, you can. So first, the correspondence is not one-to-one, right? Because the non-linearity basically messes up everything. And the second is, conceptually you're right, but it'd be hard to calculate the tri-spectrum, right?
Okay,
no, space is much larger. Okay. I mean, for the bi-spectrum, it's already a bit complicated, but yeah.
Okay. Sure, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then going to the noisy case, we kind of, this is a result, the x-axis is the noise level in decreasing order, and the y-axis is the inverse of the constraining ellipse in the previous plot, so it's a constraining power. And here's the power spectrum baseline. And then there are some different ways to capture the non-Gaussian information. You already see that even in these noisy cases, there are a lot of non-Gaussian information here. And if you ask where is the scattering constraint, it's here. So it's always the same as the convolutional neural net constraint. So I think this is strongly suggesting, not proving, but suggesting that the scattering transform might already exhausted all the information in this weak lensing context.
Yeah, I might ask you here something. So do you optimize your analysis in any way? For example, coming back to the scales, the choice of scales for S1, S2 steps and so on, do you optimize over them or how?
No, we don't optimize them. We just pick, so the scale, basically there are dyadic scales because in Fourier spaces, it's a very wide kind of window in Fourier space. So yeah, so we don't need to optimize them. We just pick like a 2-pixel scale, 4-pixel scale, 8-pixel scale, etc. And and then calculate them. And we didn't optimize the profile.
Right, but do you think like there is room for further optimization of the analysis?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I haven't optimized it yet, but I did try several different profiles of the wavelet, but basically they introduce no change of as long as you are smooth enough, like compact enough in kind of well-behaved profile shape, it does not change it very much. So that's something possible to do, but I don't believe it can, there are much room to improve.
S2, S1, so when you're stopping at S2, when it is comparable to CNN, so does it mean that CNN captures only up to trispectral level information?
No, because S1 here, it's similar to the power spectrum, right? So the S2 is something similar to, so it's not a one-to-one correspondence. I have to emphasize that, because like if it's only when you do the linear statistics, right? Like the higher the moments, you can separate them clearly, but yeah, it's not always possible to separate them. Mm-hmm. Just kind of the S1 have mainly power spectrum information, but also have some higher order information. And the S2, it's kind of, it will have both the 3-point, 4-point, etc. information. It's not only 4-point information.
I see, okay.
Because the non-linearity, if you like expand it in the Taylor expansion, then it contains all the terms, right? It's not only the 4-point term.
But is S1 the power spectrum in your own wavelet space?
It's not only on wavelet, but also you have first order non-linearity. I think that's even more important. So wavelet is just a kind of a binning of scale, but the non-linearity, it does not raise the power.
I mean, I can think about also adding S3 on top of that, right? So will the information get even more than CNN? So if it is possible to add also S3, like one more layer, can it then gain more information than CNN?
Oh yeah, so that's also a good question. In this case, I don't think so. Actually, for S3, you have three different oriented scales, so the number of coefficients will also explode, and then it's hard to do the realistic like inference. But I tried adding some subset of the S3. It does not add much more information.
Thanks.
Can I ask, in terms of how much room there is to further optimize this, you mentioned that this was originally found by, the scattering transform was found in 2012 by mathematicians. Was it that they were led to this by some set of criteria, that if you take some set of criteria, then the scattering transform is the sort of correct, uniquely chosen analysis to achieve those criteria, or is it not like that? Is it more like they were suggesting it as, you know, one possible thing to do on kind of the more intuitive grounds that you mentioned and just
yeah, that's also a very good question. I think it's more empirically developed technique. So because the, like the nonlinearity, so I think that the main difference here, like to the higher order statistics, the nonlinearity, instead of using linear statistics like bilinear or trilinear, we use the nonlinearity pointwise in real space. So that's a particular choice, kind of mimicking the structure of convolutional neural net. And I think still we don't fully understand why this works so well in physical fields, right? Because this is a very limited set of like statistics. So it's just empirically it works well in some natural images and physical fields. But then why? What's the inner working, the deep connection between like this, the design of the statistic and the physical equation? I think it's still something we need to understand more. So okay. Yeah, so I'm also trying working on this, but yeah, I don't think people know that.
Just one last question. So if I understood, when you say from S1 to S2, that means every time you go higher, you do another convolution? Is that?
Sorry, every time you go higher, you do what?
Another convolution.
Another convolution? Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Okay, so if you do Laplace transform or something, wouldn't that give you some analysis?
Yeah. So that's also a good question. If you do log transform, that's basically another type of pointwise nonlinearity, right? So that might be, I mean, formally that's some kind of alternative of the modulus. But the wavelet convolution is basically, it's a linear way to arrange spatial information, right? Yeah, of course you can do it differently, but if you want to do linear, the design here is one linear operation to mix spatial information and one pointwise nonlinearity to get translation invariance. Yeah, but I think that's also possible ways to go.
I'm thinking whether it becomes like a going to power spectrum versus Planck if you go to Laplace.
So her question, I think, was about using Laplace transforms to understand, you know, more analytically what's happening, as opposed to doing like a log transform of your data.
Okay, but but Laplace transform is again a linear transform, right? My understanding is that we kind of, these are two parts of the question. We want to use some particular linear transform to provide a good viewpoint of the data, but still we need a nonlinear operation in order to get translation invariant information. Because if you just do linear, then there's only the mean is translation invariant.
I have to think.
Sorry for this. Yeah, but I think that's very interesting directions also. Right. So just to continue, I mean, in order to get this improvement, I think one other advantage I want to emphasize is that you just need to add about 40 coefficients to the set of summary statistics instead of training millions of parameters or use like hundreds or thousands of higher order coefficients. So this is not a problem for theoretical study, but it will be extremely important for real data analysis of like observational data, because the dimensionality of the statistics really is a problem. So some technical details of like progress. We also did a test on another set of simulation with varying dark energy properties and the matter of neutrino mass, and kind of expected it, constantly find it's an improvement, a lot of improvement to power spectrum. And now I'm not only working on these kind of simulation based theoretical feature forecast. I'm also working on real data. So I'm now working on the HSC weak lensing, Subaru HSC weak lensing survey data. And it is basically an 8-meter telescope with the depth of the survey very similar to the future LSST. And it's a lot of data, and basically the deepest thing we can have now. And I think the result will be out in a few months, hopefully. And this will be the first real cosmological constraint of this new statistic. And I'm also working on the Euclid preparation, and maybe in the future also the data process. So if time allows, I will also come back to this problem of higher order statistics. So basically the problem, like as I described before, is that higher order statistics will amplify the tail of the distribution. So if you have a heavy tail distribution, you can kind of expect that it will fail, right? Because some moment will diverge. So even if it does not diverge, like the high, like the log normal distribution, still you have this problem. So if we we might wonder what's the case in the for the scattering transform, how it look like in this experiment. So the scattering strategy in this case can be seen as basically folding the PDF of the distribution, right? So it's again, also the problem is we want to probe the tail, but instead of amplifying the tail, we can fold the core in order to downweight it. So this another way to say it is keep first order. So then in this simple experiment, kind of it performs much better in this highly non-Gaussian regime than all the higher order moments. Right, so there are also, okay, I'll quickly go through it. These kind of statistics can be applied to like 1D, 2D, 3D fields, right? So we were now considering applying it to like time series in astronomy. And like 2D fields, including interstellar medium field, and 3D. 3D is a bit difficult because you need more calculations, but it's also possible. So we are trying to do it on simulations of like MHD simulations and cosmological simulations. So then it's actually also possible to extend these ideas. So that means it's not only just a single scattering transform. There might be a family of like analytical statistics inspired by convolutional neural net behind it. So the basic idea is originally we just do linear statistics of the original field, right? That's the traditional statistic. And the scattering transform is like convolving it with modulus and wavelength and do a modulus. So the main difference here is the modulus. And it's, you can extend it and maybe go deeper. So of course, beyond doing these auto statistics, like the mean of each of these fields, we can also consider cross statistics. Like we have these family of fields, we have these fields, we can do the cross correlation of these two fields, and we can do the cross correlation of these modulus fields. And that is something beyond scattering transform, but also containing a lot of information. So that's also there's some work related to it. And another possible way is that when you go deeper anyway, the number of statistics will explode. So still have the problem of whether we might have to learn something. But the idea here is we might don't need to learn the spatial kernel, like we can fix them as wavelets, but just learn the combination of different channels. Right, so just a simple visualization of the cross correlation idea. So there are, I've shown some success of the scattering transform, right, in image synthesis, but actually it can fail also in some other cases. For example, when you have the filament structures, actually the scattering transform is very hard to recover it. But if you add the cross correlation between the original image and like this modulus field, it can kind of easily recover these filaments well. And again, this is a compact set of statistics. This is another kind of 40 numbers. So it's quite compact. Right, so to conclude, I talked about different ways to extract information from a field. Talk about traditional statistical ways and convolutional neural nets, and the scattering transform is something in between of these two seemingly very different approaches. It kind of share the advantage from both sides, but it does not need training, so it's closer to physics. And on the one hand, it may seem as just a lower order. It'd be weird, but it's a lower order, higher order statistic, or lower order endpoint function. But on the other hand, it can also be seen as like a toy model of two-layer convolutional neural net without training. So I've shown that in the weak lensing cosmology context, it can extract as much information as what convolutional neural net can do. It's very natural to ask why it can be a success in this case. So I think this is related to the complexity of the field we are dealing with every day. And so we kind of, it's interesting to see that the physical fields usually have a complexity in between of Gaussian random field and the very complex biological world. So I think these kind of scattering idea standing in between of these two approaches might also be the very promising way to probe all the physical fields, and it might be the way to go. Thank you very much. That happy to take more questions.
Questions? Yes, I have a question about the HSC analysis that you were mentioning. So just thinking about this, when we do like weak lensing analysis, even with just the power spectrum, we have to spend a lot of time making sure our cosmology inferences are like robust. It's modeling uncertainties like baryonic feedback or intrinsic alignments. And I know this is probably early stages, but do you have like plans for us, like it seems like it would be hard to assess how these statistics are sensitive to those kind of systematics. Do you have plans to investigate that at all?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, so we are working also like for the HSC survey, of course, to get the cosmology inference, we need to take those into account. So basically, I think there's a separation, I think, of approaches. So we are heavily now relying on forward modeling of all these physics and the systematic errors, it actually can be easier than the traditional de-bias way, because like, yeah, it's easy to forward model all the systematics. So the main difficult might be we need a lot of simulations, and maybe that would take a long time to get. Right, but otherwise it's, yeah, we are working on that, and if we can forward model it, then we can have unbiased the result.
Thanks.
So can I ask a question? I cannot see anyone else yet. So very nice talk. One question I have is why modulus and not a square? I don't know if you mentioned this.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Let me see. Yeah, so the original motivation is that you want something something stable. So it's kind of here, right? If you raise it to the second power, then you are basically amplifying the tail of the distribution. And, mm-hmm. and that will create like instability of the statistic, and also that will make you lose information in the high Nungo regime. So originally it comes from like, it's just trying to mimic the convolutional neural net, because convolutional neural net is using a pointwise nonlinearity. It's not modulus, but can be ReLU or some other nonlinearity. But the observation there is that the nonlinearity we use is always very conservative. So it's not something like polynomial, which goes very fast to infinity when x goes to infinity. It's always like increasing slower or the same with the same rate, like as
X. But I guess you could then imagine something like a logistic function instead of just the absolute values. I mean, it's just a smoother version of it. So why, I mean, does it make a difference that it's just exactly absolute value, maybe more smooth than that?
Yeah, you are right. That's also possible. So there's some mathematical properties of using modulus. I don't know whether that's like, I don't have a direct connection, but that's some desirable, I think, properties. So one is that like after this convolution, right, you have a complex wavelet. So actually you need a nonlinearity, which is which can deal with the complex number. And modulus is kind of a natural choice if you want to conserve the norm of the field. Mm-hmm. Right, so you take the modulus, but the norm is still the same as the previous complex valued field. So then you can prove some mathematical properties of like stability to noise, something like that.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Sam, go for it. Oh, sorry, I can't see who raised their hand first, but whoever, yeah, go for it. Whoever online is.
I think I'll use my initiative. Hi, thanks a lot. That was a really nice talk. I'm just wondering about the predictions for these statistics. For the power spectrum and bispectrum, there's a regime where you can use perturbation theory to make analytical predictions. Is there a similar regime here, or has that been explored?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. I hope so, but I don't think that's easy. I think the main reason is like when you predict power spectrum, bispectrum, you are in the perturbated regime. And because those statistics are linear statistics, I mean, it can be bilinear or trilinear, but still it's linear. So then like additions or integral can be easily done for those statistics. But the modulus is kind of harder. So then in some sense, it's similar to like other non-Gaussian statistics as P count or Minkowski function, right? It's the mathematics is just quite different from the perturbation expansion of the theory. So I think it might be possible to have predictions like in Halo model, but then the problem is, I mean, if you go to the Halo model, sometimes you have a crosstalk, right? Because Halo model is not 100% accurate. So you want to check with simulations. And yeah, so sometimes if you have simulation, then you can directly calculate it. You don't even need a Halo model. My impression is that, like, at least for weak lensing, people already have this tendency because, yeah, we have enough simulation now, so we don't need to rely on a Halo model in some particular cases.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Kendrick, I see your hand is raised. Did you have a question, or is that a relic of an earlier part of the talk?
Oh yeah, I am. So thanks, Siha. I thought this was a super super interesting talk. I could probably ask questions for a long time, but I narrowed it down to two. First, I was wondering if your wavelet basis, if all the wavelets were isotropic, or if you had wavelets with like angular momentum greater than zero, if you know what I mean.
We are not using isotropic ones. We average it after the non-linearity. Yeah, so we are in different orientations. And then like after this non-linear transform, we then average. So it's not the same as like adding them here.
Okay, great.
I think that might be related to the property of the complex modulus, right? So if you have all the it's a technical thing,
okay. The other question I was wondering is going back to those weak lensing forecasts, I thought those forecasts were super striking. I was sort of curious if you get this very small error ellipse if you use a list of about 40 scattering coefficients with different scales and spins. I was wondering if you had a sense for whether some restricted subset of those coefficients were providing most of the information, or if it was sort of like uniformly distributed between the 40 coefficients.
Oh yeah. So that's also very, sorry, I don't have the backup slide here. So it's in a paper. It's basically the non-Gaussianity happens at all scales, right? Because we know it's a gradual process, right? So you have non-Gaussian at many scales. Yeah, so the scattering coefficient is also a function of scales, so you can find the nonlinear non-Gaussianity information at all different scales. And so, for example, for this direction, basically this is just two-parameter family, right? So it's again the along this direction is just the overall height of amplitude, and this direction is the amplitude of non-Gaussianity. You can just parameterize the non-Gaussianity by one number. Yeah, so some linear, so then this corresponding to some linear combination, right, of the scattering coefficients. And it's, I had the plot in the paper, but it's basically the second order statistics is a measure of non-Gaussianity amplitude at different scales. And the shape is not very informative in this case. So it's basically just the overall extent of non-Gaussianity. So it's spread in many scales. Of course, more information in small scales, right? Because you have more modes. But yeah. Hmm. Oh, I should be careful. Not sure when you go to highly non-linear regime. Not sure that you always. Yeah. But in general, it's in small scales.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. So thank you again, Siha. That was a really super interesting talk. In view of time, I think maybe we should close it there. But let's thank give him one more round of applause.
And I hope one day I can visit in person.
Yes, likewise. Okay. Well, thanks again. See you. Oh, that's the last group meeting of the year, I should say. So I'll see everybody in January.
I have the privilege to be the last one.
Yes, exactly.
For the year, I mean, not for the year.
Okay.